Welcome to the deep dive. You've handed us a really interesting lecture today, and well, we're going to do what we always do, dig in and pull out those key insights to give you a clear picture.
Sounds good.
Today, it's all about the connection between Peter Waldo's followers and the Arnoldists, you know, the followers of Arnold of Brescia. We're exploring how these two distinct groups eventually sort of merged.
Exactly. Yeah, the lecture you sent over lays out this really compelling history. You've got the poor of Lyon, who we generally call the Waldensians, and then the poor of Lombardy, the Arnoldists, two separate streams.
Right.
And our mission today is to unpack how they came together, make that complex history really accessible, and hopefully, you know, provide some of those aha moments.
Totally. We're focusing on these two main guys, Peter Waldo and Arnold of Brescia, and their respective followers. The heart of this deep dive is really getting into the how and why of their union and what that meant down the line. So let's start with the background, the context.
Yeah, okay. So to really set the scene, the lecture cleverly starts way back with Acts 15 in the Bible. You know, the early church arguing about whether non-Jewish converts needed circumcision.
Right. The Jerusalem Council.
Exactly. And the lecture draws this really neat parallel to, well, all the later disagreements within Christianity. It kind of highlights that figuring out scripture and how to apply it, that's been an ongoing thing.
Yeah, it's never really stopped, has it? That constant interpretation, sometimes reinterpretation. And then the lecture zooms out to the bigger picture of the late 12th century. It talks about the feudal system starting to weaken a bit, cities and trade growing, and crucially, the rise of vernacular languages, everyday languages. There's this quote from Enrico Santorial. It mentions the social shifts, but above all, the adoption of the vernacular to take the place of Latin, used only by the scholars.
And that is such a critical point. Think about it. This shift wasn't just linguistic. It totally changed the game for religion. Suddenly, scriptures, religious talk, it could reach ordinary people directly, not just the educated elite who knew Latin.
Right. Bypassing the gatekeepers, in a way.
Yeah. And like the lecture points out, referencing Acts 15 again, these debates over theology, they've always been there. It's part of the history.
Okay. So into this changing world steps Peter Waldo and his group, the Poor of Lyon. The lecture makes it clear their initial thing was really about poverty, inspired directly by the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5.3, blessed are the poor in spirit.
Now, what's interesting is how Waldo first went about it. He didn't just, you know, break away immediately. He actually went to Pope Alexander III back in 1179, asking for permission to preach. It wasn't initially a rebellion.
Which seems like a sensible move, doesn't it? But the Pope, well, the lecture says he was kind of impressed by Waldo's piety, but he punted the decision to the local bishops.
Right. Standard procedure, maybe?
Yeah, but the Bishop of Lyon, he wasn't having it. See, preaching back then was mostly seen as the bishop's domain. The lecture really stresses this. Local priests mainly did sacraments, often in Latin, sermons for regular folks, rare, and if they happened, usually Latin.
Which immediately brings up that whole question of, you know, authority. Who gets to interpret scripture? Who gets to share it? Refusing to let Waldo and his followers preach in the vernacular, the language people actually understood, well, that was a direct hit on the established system.
Yeah, a major bottleneck.
And predictably, by 1184, Pope Lucius III excommunicated the Poor of Lyon. Why? For doing exactly what they felt called to do.
Well,
sharing the Bible in a language people could grasp. And excommunication back then, that wasn't trivial. It had huge social religious consequences.
Which, ironically, probably pushed them further down that path, right? Almost freed them up in a weird way. Okay, so that's the Waldensian side developing. Now let's switch gears to Arnold of Brescia and his group, the Poor of Lombardy, or Arnoldists. The lecture notes they actually started like 40 years before Waldo's group really got going.
Yeah, Arnold's background is fascinating. He studied under Peter Abelard, a huge name in medieval thought, known for emphasizing reason in theology. But Arnold wasn't just an academic. As the lecture quotes Sartorio, he preached with prophetic fire, a return to apostolic purity and poverty. He took intellectual ideas and made them a practical call to action.
Sounds like a firebrand. And his main target was the church hierarchy's lifestyle, right? The bishops getting rich.
Exactly. The lecture paints this picture of bishops focused on wealth, even building castles. Predictably, this caused a lot of criticism. Arnold, who'd been a monk, called for the church to renounce its wealth, return land to the cities, basically get back to that original apostolic purity and poverty.
And that message must have hit home for a lot of people, seeing the contrast between church leaders and gospel teachings.
Definitely. But Arnold went even further, proposing something really radical for the time. He argued that clergy who owned property essentially lacked the spiritual authority to perform valid sacraments.
Whoa, okay, that's a fundamental challenge.
Huge. And the lecture flags this as foreshadowing later Donatist views within the Waldensian movement itself, that whole debate about whether a priest's morality affects the sacrament's validity. The Arnoldists were already touching on that nerve regarding wealth.
Unsurprisingly, the church authorities weren't exactly thrilled. Arnold was condemned as a heretic, eventually executed in 1155. But, and this is key, the lecture stresses his ideas didn't die with him. His followers, the poor of Lombardy, were still a well-organized force when Waldo's group emerged later. So you see these two separate movements bubbling up.
And their common ground, as the lecture shows, was this deep commitment to living a simple, gospel-based life in poverty. Organizationally, they structured themselves in small communities, maybe two or three families, led by an elder. These communities reported up to a superintendent, a bishop, based in Milan. It wasn't just a loose network.
And they were really focused on education within their own ranks, too, weren't they? The lecture mentions a seminary in Milan training leaders in Bible reading, interpretation specifically the New Testament and the vernacular, often memorized, apparently.
Yeah, that focus on internal religious education was a major characteristic. They wanted people to understand scripture directly.
Okay, so if we compare the two groups, the poor of Lyon, Waldensians, and the poor of Lombardy, Arnoldists, we see shared values. Poverty, the Gospels, initially wanting to reform the Catholic clergy.
Right.
But then, as the lecture lays out, some pretty significant differences in how they live that out.
Definitely. Waldo's group, the poor of Lyon, were all about itinerant preaching, traveling constantly, spreading the message, relying on charity, that very literal take on Jesus sending out the disciples without provisions.
Whereas the poor of Lombardy, the Arnoldists, were more settled.
Exactly. They were involved in trades, crafts, professions. They shared their earnings within their communities, which were geographically fixed. They weren't primarily wandering preachers. Their focus was maybe broader communal living, that strong emphasis on scriptural education within their established groups, kind of like you see in Acts 4 and 5, the early church sharing resources.
And the lecture brings up this interesting difference regarding labor. The poor of Lyon, initially at least, seemed to see manual labor as secondary, maybe even a distraction from preaching.
Uh-huh.
But the poor of Lombardy saw work as part of their spiritual life, a way to be self-sufficient and live out their faith in their daily jobs. Two different models, really.
And the lecture kind of frames this as maybe a difference in adaptability. The Arnoldists' settled structure and integration into the working world might have made them more resilient in some ways. Waldo seemed very fixed on that specific vision of itinerant preaching. This difference really sets the stage for why they needed to negotiate when they thought about merging.
Which leads us straight to the Council of Bergamo in 1218, a really crucial moment. After some back and forth, six delegates from each side met to hash things out. The lecture lists nine theological disagreements they tackled, and amazingly, they found common ground on seven in this document, the Rescriptum. Let's walk through some key agreements.
Okay, first up, leadership. The poor of Lombardy, sometimes called the Piedmontese in the text, favored electing leaders, even a bishop. Waldo's group, the Ultramontanes, insisted Christ alone was their leader. The compromise. Pretty practical. They agreed on a clear process and educational standard for anyone wanting to lead or preach. It respected both structure and Christ's ultimate authority.
Makes sense. A pragmatic solution. What else? Ordaining new converts?
Yeah, similar deal. They agreed on a standardized path of education and training for potential leaders or preachers. It ensured some level of preparation across the board.
Okay. And what about those settled working congregations in Lombardy? Waldo hadn't been keen initially, right?
Right. He resisted that model. But the lecture notes that after Waldo died, things shifted. Eventually, having a trade actually became seen as useful, even for itinerant ministers, a way to support themselves, maybe even provide cover during persecution. So pragmatism won out over time.
Interesting evolution. Then there was baptism.
On that, they were totally united.
Abba.
The lecture says clear consensus. Baptism is essential for salvation. No wiggle room there.
And then a really big one, especially for the time, divorce.
Yeah, this was significant. They agreed divorce could be allowed for infidelity or mutual consent. That's a major break from Catholic doctrine at the time, reflecting their view that marriage wasn't a sacrament in the same way the church saw it.
Wow, okay. They also agreed on setting up community tribunals for discipline, right?
Yeah.
Handling bad behavior internally.
Yep. Showed a commitment to accountability within their own ranks. And finally, maybe the most foundational point, the Bible. absolute, unanimous agreement. The lecture stresses this. The Bible was the ultimate authority on everything faith-related. That was the bedrock.
So 7 major agreements? That's pretty impressive. But the lecture also says 2 issues remain unresolved after Bergamo. What were they?
Right, 2 sticky points. First, the salvation of Waldo himself and his early companion, Vivette. The Piedmontese group insisted on the need for a formal deathbed confession. The Ultramontanes felt that a lifelong confession of Christ as Lord was enough.
A subtle but important difference in emphasis. And the second?
The validity of sacraments performed by immoral priests. Waldo's original group tended to think the sacraments were still valid, regardless of the priest's personal life. The Piedmontese group argued that such sacraments were ineffective, invalid. And interestingly, the lecture notes this specific issue wasn't fully resolved until the Waldensians formally joined the Protestant Reformation centuries later.
But crucially, these 2 points, while unresolved, weren't seen as deal breakers for the merger.
Exactly. They didn't view them as essential tenets of faith that had to be agreed upon. This willingness to unite on the core issues while allowing some difference on secondary matters was key. And what emerged was stronger, really. Each group brought something vital. The Lion group's preaching passion, the Lombard group's organization and community focus.
And they took on a new name, the Poor of Christ. The lecture really emphasizes this created a genuine alternative for people. 2 different ways of expressing Christian faith were now visible.
Precisely. You had the Poor of Christ focusing on pastoral care, educating lay people directly in Scripture, contrasting with the Roman Catholic Church's emphasis on its institutional structure and sacraments administered by clergy. And unsurprisingly, the established church saw this as a major threat.
Yeah, they didn't just sit back. The lecture describes the response as, well, intense, manipulation, coercion, formal condemnations, the Inquisition, actual religious crusades launched against them, plus dedicated Dominican preachers arguing against them, all reinforcing the Catholic Church's position as the only true path.
It was brutal. Persecution was severe, confiscating property, torture, even death for being labeled a Waldensian heretic.
Yeah.
So to survive, they had to adapt. By the 14th century, the lecture concludes, the Waldensian movement had largely gone underground, operating in secret just to preserve themselves.
But even forced into secrecy, the lecture drives home their lasting impact. You can really see how they prefigured so much of the Protestant Reformation, that emphasis on the Bible's authority, the importance of the laity. It was a powerful synthesis, even under duress.
Absolutely. The big takeaway here is seeing how these 2 groups, with shared core values but different methods, managed to compromise and create something resilient that challenged the dominant religious power. It's a testament to finding unity amidst difference when core beliefs align.
It really is. It makes you reflect on those early challenges to religious authority and how their focus on biblical principles and lay involvement planted seeds for later changes.
And maybe a final thought for you to mull over. How might those early debates, that willingness to compromise within the Waldensian movement, teach us something today about navigating theological differences, or really any differences, and finding unity? What can we learn from their commitment to their core beliefs, but also their ability to adapt, especially when facing such strong opposition?